find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey, hello everybody, hello out there, welcome on back to the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. Here we are again, Mike. How are you?
What is so good.
Up?
What's going on? Reunited for 302 or 303, I forget the number where we'll be.
I think we're 303.
You and me, Scotty.
I think this is 303, if I'm not mistaken. Welcome, everyone, to the show, and I hope you are doing well. I hope you are surviving during what seems to be every day more and more like the end of the world, or the end of America, at least. I'm pretty much sure America's donezo. So
it's good to know that you're hoping everybody's having a good time. Because we haven't had one episode yet where you came on and be like, man, I hope you're all having the crappiest days. I hope your house is burning down. Mm-hmm. I hope your children told them that they don't love you. I hope all your stocks went under. I hope all your sports teams to have their key stars break their legs and lose the season.
Yeah.
I want all that to happen. But please listen to us for an hour and a half.
Well, that's kind of how my day went. Like, today was one of the first days I really felt the Corona blues. I got the Corona blues. Ain't nothing to do. Just working on my lawn all day. That's all I do. This is I just work on my lawn and I paint. I feel like that's all I do.
Is it just because that's all that's there, or you know, it's like I gotta get this done at this moment, and it's just a stinky kind of Thursday?
I don't know, man. It's just like, I don't know. So, like, the backyard, I replanted all this grass. All this grass grew. It was amazing. And then all these dead spots started in another area, probably from the heat and the dog pee. And then it's like, well, that section looks great now. And now I got to tag that section. And now, like, I'm looking into solutions, how to stop from dog pee spots. And, like, some of them are like, yeah, you could feed the dog this pill, but then I heard it gives them kidney stones. So now I'm watering. Now I'm literally watering down the grass after every time he pees.
My dog is in agony, but my lawn looks immaculate.
My dog actually physically can't pee anymore. He is he's so blocked up.
I mean, we allow you to come and enjoy our beautiful backyard, but you know you'll hear dog screaming for 3 hours straight. So it's really worth it here at the Home Depot.
Hey babe, on Saturday from 9 to 12, can you take the dog out?
I got some friends coming over and Sean is coming over and he's going to take off his flip-flops to, you know, really feel the grass. And, you know, this is my moment. Just because Ovi is, every time he moves to his left, screaming in agony, doesn't mean I can't enjoy life, okay?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just, today was just like, I don't know, last 2 days, just kind of like in a fog. Like, I need, like, I don't know. I need something to do. I mean, we've done a couple things. We like hung out with friends and whatnot, but it just feels like, I don't know. I want to like go out to eat. I want to do comedy. It's been in 2 days. It'll be 3 months since my last gig, you know? I think I have another online gig next week, but That's literally just like keeping my toe just in the water. Like, I feel like it's almost like this is going to be like a reset for comedy. So it's like all like the, I don't know, man. I feel like everyone starts at, you know, of course, like the headliners will get their, you know, they'll get their spots and they'll get their gigs. But I feel like everyone else, man, it's, I feel like it's showcase time again. Like, hey, you've been on for 3 months. Like, maybe you're great now. Maybe you got great new material. Maybe you've regressed. I don't know.
So, like, all these comedy clubs got to be just guessing because they can't really look at anything recent to balance it off of.
Also,
I mean, you should just go to, like, Levity Live and, like, what do you got to lose? Yo, you don't know anything.
I mean, comedy's like a sport, you know? Like, it's like when you're in prime condition and you're really doing it a lot and your jokes are hitting and you know your act back and forth, you know, you're clearly a better comic. It doesn't take a genius to, you know, to know that. And then when you don't do it, it's like, even when before this happened, when I didn't do like a set for like 2 weeks, it felt like I'd get up there and it'd feel like I had like shaky legs until I kind of got that first joke landed and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember how to do this. So 3 months is going to be really interesting to see what people, how people are, like dust in the cobwebs. Like, I imagine the audience will be somewhat forgiving, but you can't expect a comic after 3 months to be razor sharp.
Can you imagine that first comedian, that first story of bombing after this? Like, that some comedian is like dying and he or she's like, I got to get on stage. I know this, we got stuff, it's going to kill, blah, blah, blah. And to go up there with the desperation of them and the desperation of the audience to have a good time and to have that moment to just hear crickets.
Yeah, yeah.
Has to be the most earth-shattering failure of all time. Like, it's almost like you could go up there reading the yellow books and you should be able to get, like, 10 laughs.
Yeah, it's just I don't know, man. There's going to be some epic bombs coming, that's for sure. I mean, I felt like I kind of bombed in my basement a couple weeks ago. That was kind of an interesting feeling. You know, bombing at the club's a little different, but bombing in your basement's kind of weird. It's kind of not as bad, to be honest. You kind of bomb and you're like, well, I didn't have to travel anywhere. I'm home, so, you know, whatever. But
yeah, but like when you bomb on the road, at least you have that quiet.
Yeah.
Going home where you can just be in your head. Like the second you pop your head out of your basement, how'd it go, honey?
Yeah. I've been feeling that a little bit too. My wife's work has really been picking up and stuff like that. And we've been, you know, she's pregnant and hormonal. And, it feels a little bit like the walls are closing in the last few days. And I've been just like a fog, like going through the motions of the day. I'm like been watching Breaking Bad again. And I feel like Walter White is like rubbing off on me too. You know, like in the mid season, like you watched Breaking Bad, right?
Of course.
Yeah. You know, like the mid seasons where he's like, he's just like in this like fog after he quits and he like lost his wife and his family and he just gets like angry easily. That's how I felt. I feel like I felt like Walter White the last 2 days. I mean, I haven't started cooking meth yet, but.
So you're basically the Fly episode where you're so entranced with, I need something to do and it has to be perfect that you're obsessed with it and you don't want to hear from anybody else about anything.
Yeah. I have a problem like doing nothing like for a day, you know, like I don't like doing nothing. And when I almost have this, I almost feel like a guilt when I don't do anything during the day. Like, damn, there goes one day on earth that you just did absolutely nothing. You just pissed it away. You know, and there's only so many times you want to do the same thing or a project or you want to continue what you're doing. And I finished like a big project last week and I'm like, oh, you deserve a day off. And then I take a day off and I feel like killing myself. So it's like, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to take those pills I've been given Obi. I'm going to die in agony.
Like, do you have you felt any of this corona restriction or the tightening at all? Like, after a while,
to a degree, yeah. Granted, now this state is a little looser than New Jersey. I haven't been like full on going out there and doing many things. I have done some looser things, like we did like a run with some like a run group, and I didn't wear a mask during that time frame. But yeah, I mean, I would say probably around the second month, I would say probably last month, I was feeling a little more where it's like, you know, like even with work, like you have a couple things to do, but you basically say unless something comes up, you don't really have a full day's worth of stuff to do. And then it's just like, what do you want to do? You want to work out? It's like we worked out every day. I mean, my brain needs like something weird in its life, you know, and just something out of the blue where you just stare at it and you go, WTF, what? And like that entices me. That will keep me enticed for like 3-4 hours straight, like just doing something out of the wall, out of the blue. Doesn't have to be the most exciting thing, but just something that's like, okay, that's a conversation starter.
Yeah.
I need that.
I mean, that's kind of how I'm like my side gigs / side hustle, if you will, or side interests. Like, I feel like that's what keeps me going. It's like, oh, you know, work the day job and whatever, but I really like the comedy and the podcast and the, even doing the trivia and whatever, whatever I have to do to kind of just, I don't know, the things that I'm actually interested in. It feels like, I don't know, I'm tired of cooking. I'm tired of cooking 3 meals a day. I'm tired of like cooking the same stuff. I'm tired of washing dishes. I'm tired of putting clothes away. Like it just, I don't know, man. It's just like I understand how people go like mad inside a jail cell, never mind their own home.
What's like the oddest thing you realize? You're like, damn, I miss doing that. Like something you would never think in a million years you would sit back and say, oh, I miss doing that.
I miss driving to work. I don't know if that's weird, but I miss putting on what I want to listen to. And that 20, my drive's about 20 minutes, that like 20 minutes of just peace and quiet and thinking about the day or thinking about something. I usually have my cup of coffee. I miss that kind of quiet time. I'm trying to think of what else. I mean, I talked about it before. I really can't wait to go out to eat. Like, I want someone to serve me, eat their food, not do the dishes, and bring me a cold beer. Like, I miss that.
I hope Jersey gets locked down where, like, you just break into somebody's house and you put it, what do you want? Make me food. Call me sir.
Well, like,
bring the pepper cracker.
You have, like a stable of, like, what? I don't know. I would say I have 15 things that I generally make, like, for dinner. You know, like, you know, in and out, or maybe some variety of the side dishes, but, you know. And then after a while, you're like, God, I don't want to see this food anymore. Like, it's the same thing. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, out of the blue, I'd start getting into jarring. I did.
It's funny. I saw you do that. I've been wanting the pickle for a long time.
Yep.
This is what it's come to, Mike. This is what our lives have come to. Our podcast has come to. We're talking about not doing dishes and pickling. This is where you guys tune in weekly for your content. But
yep, I've made some pickles. I made some apple butter. I think if I have time on Sunday, I'm going to do homemade salt pretzels.
I think you should do homemade firecrackers.
A homemade firecracker?
Yeah. Get a little adventurous, Mike.
I mean, the last thing I want to do is end up in hospital and Ten Finger Frank shows up and just starts shaking his head at me. That's the last thing I want. For those who don't know, I had an uncle named Frank who every 4th of July, he would bring out firecrackers and lay them and let them blow up in his hand. And his nickname in the family was Ten Finger Frank. And the reason we call him Ten Finger Frank is we always said, well, he's going to get a new name one day.
Yeah.
Oddly, he kept it.
And it turns out his uncle is Jason Pierre Paul, everybody. It's interesting.
No. No, then he'd be 7½ Finger Frank.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's just like, very much look forward to the podcast. That's been kind of fun. Like that I feel like something to do at nighttime. Like I'm not a big TV guy either. Like I put it on at the end of the night to kind of wind down, but I'm not like I got to tune into this series or like I have a really hard time like starting a series. Like I know like it's probably good and like people tell me it's great, you got to check it out, and I believe all of you, but it's just this, I don't know, that task of starting a series sometimes feels like daunting to me. Like, oh, all right, I got to like watch 5 seasons of this, you know?
Well, for starters, we now have like 8,000 different platforms to try to find. Oh, is it on Netflix? No. Is it on Hulu? No. Is it on Peacock? No. Is it on HBO Max? No. Is it on Disney Plus? No. There's thousands of places where it's like, oh, you got to check this out. This is on the Indian Showtime Network, and it's
it's
ridiculous. And they're all going for the money, you know. Like, it's funny. Like HBO Max is like, oh, we got reruns of Friends, and it's like, well, I can see Friends any day on TBS. Yeah, but you get to pick which one on our network.
Yeah,
and we're going to show you the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League. Yeah. You know? That movie sucked. Yeah, but this one may not.
Yeah, it's just there's so much content, and I'm all about like that much content being out there. Because I mean, look, we would be hypocritical if we were like, no, you know. Cause listen, we're an independent. I don't know what you're gonna call it. Independent show, I guess. We put out our own stuff. We edit our own stuff. We book our own stuff. We're trying to get out there in a sea of a million podcasts too. So. But I think I'm a creature of habit, man. I've come to realize that too more in like the pandemic. Like I'm a creature of I could watch Always Sunny before I go to bed. Breaking Bad I put on again and I'm into it again because it's like, oh, I really, really love this and it's comfortable for me. Like I put that on. I listen to the same podcast over and over again, radio. It's so I'm like, as much as I love new stuff, I feel like maybe like during like relaxing time, I almost need something familiar.
Yeah, speaking of Sunny, weird little question here. Now, obviously, we're going through a very interesting time with everything going on with the Black Lives Matter and all the movements that's going on. And I find this kind of weird. So Jimmy Fallon had to apologize for an SNL act that he did, I think, 8 years ago, where he did blackface.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was doing Chris Rock. So it's kind of weird, like, thinking about this. So he had to apologize, and people were angry, yet...
They weren't
angry. You know, we have Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder.
Jimmy Kimmel used to do it on The Man Show.
Jimmy Kimmel did it on The Man Show. And in Always Sunny, they did Lethal Weapon 5 and 6, yep. Where Mac and Dennis swapped out. It's almost like... If you forgot about it, we're going to get angry once we remember it.
I think all of that is kind of BS because that was done, like Jimmy Fallon, friends. Let's take Jimmy Fallon. That was done. The producer signed off on that. Someone wrote that. You know, SNL, this machine of entertainment, past that and knew that skit was coming. So to blame him is a little weird. Mm-hmm. Also, do you think Chris Rock had a problem with that? I guarantee Chris Rock was laughing about it. You know, like to go do like revisionist being offended in the past, I don't know. It seems a little weird to me. And especially when it was done with the intention of humor, like it was done to be funny, and it wasn't like it wasn't racist jokes. He was like doing an impersonation of Chris Rock, you know what I mean? It wasn't like he was making fun of black people. He was doing Chris Rock, and he did a damn good impression.
Well, it's not half bad.
Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel doing Karl Malone back in the day was pretty funny. You know, like it's Always Sunny. Like their whole point is kind of poking fun at. Doing blackface in the offensive. Now you look at people doing blackface in movies that clearly shouldn't have been. That's to me, that's offensive. But when it's done in the goal of being funny. I think it comes from a place of trying to be funny, and that's it. So,
yeah.
And I also think it like cheapens like real movements like we see now. Like, I think being offended by something like that, like, are you actually offended? I don't think so. So something like a real movement like this, Black Lives Matter, all the things going on in the country that very effective and very meaningful, and we could all, you know, see the reasoning behind it and get behind it. Going to something like that almost is like, well, that's like, I don't know. I mean, that brings up the the Democratic Party, man, kneeling with the kente cloth on. Oh my God. Is that the most pandering photo you've ever seen in your life?
It's so weird. Like, I see it, I'm like, I know they doing it out of respect, but at the same time I'm like, oh, this is so cringeworthy.
I compared it to, remember in like middle school and high school you had those assemblies and like they would come in and rap about like not smoking, like a bunch of like cheesy white guys like, yo, we don't want to rap, you don't smoke, you know, like, you know, and it was just like pandering to this like hip hop that kids love, but they do not love that, like what you're doing right now.
Oh, yeah. A side story, at my high school, they did one of those, and our school was actually barred from ever them performing at our place again. Okay. They did one of those PSAs or whatever, you know, treat people right, whatever. And so this is like the 90s, and this is around the time they did the McDonald's commercial where they had the special needs person in the commercials and, welcome McDonald's, how may I help you?
Right.
And so they're doing their bit, and they basically did verbatim that. And I guess the way the guy did it was just so on. Like, everybody in my school started busting out laughing during this assembly. Yeah. And I'm talking not just us kids. I'm talking about literally all the teachers too.
Yeah.
And it was almost weird because like it happened early on and like they went through the whole assembly and it was like some of us, we were looking at each other like, man, they started off funny. They haven't gone for the laugh since then.
yeah.
And like at the end, they're like doing questions, and like one of the actors is like, "Wait, but why'd you all laugh at that moment?" And it's just like, well, it was just so out of the blue, and it was almost like, I don't want to say they were mocking, but it was almost, it came off like a joke. You know what I mean?
That's the whole thing. And it was just, it's naturally so
funny, so we all laughed, and basically we found out from our teacher that. They're like, yeah, they contacted our school board. They said they'll never perform here again.
when you get into impressions of things like that, it's a very fine line, man, between getting laughed at and being taken seriously. Like, you have to really figure it out, and it's gotta mean something to people, because it can go south so quick. But we can get back into this issue after our guest. We're coming up on our call here. Burlu, who we got tonight?
Scott, tonight we're going to be talking with actor Sean Kanan. For you Karate Kid fans, you may remember him as Mike Barnes in Part 3. For those of you who are fans of General Hospital, you may remember him as AJ Quartermain. Or those fans of The Bold and the Beautiful and The Young and the Restless, he was Deacon Sharp. So we're going to be chatting with them about his new project and talk about his career as a whole.
Sounds awesome. So let's get Sean Kanan on the line. Getting here. Sean, first off, thank you for giving us a couple minutes on the show here. Like we were talking just before this, we had like a recording issue. I know you have a new show out, so I guess we should start with that and what you've been working on. And I know it's out, and I know you were even possibly in the award discussion with that. Tell us about the new show.
Well, it's really exciting. It's a project that I've been trying to get made for a very long time, and it finally came to fruition. It's called Studio City, and it's a digital drama that's on Amazon Prime, and it's a short-form digital drama. So the episodes are between 10 and 15 minutes. There's 6 episodes for the first season, so you can binge-watch the entire first season in, like, around an hour. And stars some actors who I think people will recognize. There's Tristan Rogers from General Hospital, and Carolyn Hennessy, Patrika Darbo, Sarah Joy Brown, and myself. And, you know, it's been getting tremendous feedback, great reviews, and we've been nominated for almost 20 awards between the Independent Series Awards and the Daytime Emmy pre-nominations. And tomorrow, actual Daytime Emmy nominations are being announced on The Talk, which on the East Coast is on at 2 p.m., 11 a.m. Right. our time, and we find out if, you know, if we actually get to go to the end, which is going to be
exciting. That's awesome.
That's freaking awesome. Now, you have been in the daytime shows since the 90s. I mean, tell us kind of, like, as I listened to some of your interviews, you talk about you wanted to do Studio City because almost like of the – talked about some of the negative stereotypes of, like, soap operas. So kind of give us a gist of, like, what a day is when you're acting on these shows, like how much work goes into every day.
Right. Well, yeah, I you know, you write what you know. And so I created a show that reflects a large part of what my professional life has been. And I wanted to show what it's like being, you know, being an actor on a daytime show. Well, it does ostensibly seem like it's a really interesting and unique job working on TV. You still have a lot of the same problems that everybody else has. And my character, Sam Stevens, plays Dr. Pierce Hartley on the number 2 soap opera in the country, Hearts on Fire. And, you know, he's a guy that he always thought that he should have been an action star and had a bigger career and even a bigger life. And his life gets turned upside down when at the end of the pilot episode, somebody shows up that he never knew existed. The show deals with a lot of interesting and pressing social issues. We have a storyline that deals with ageism and Me Too and LGBTQ and a lot of stuff. But, you know, we do it in a way where we're not beating you over the head with it. I mean, nobody wants to be preached to and have their, you know, finger wagged at them. We like to say we make you laugh sometimes, we make you cry, but hopefully we entertain you all the time. So what is a day like working at a soap opera? You know, it's a lot of people think that it's really, really long, horrible hours in a soap opera. That's not really true. For instance, when I did Bold and the Beautiful, we would only work Tuesday through Friday, always had Mondays off. And generally speaking, you wouldn't work every one of the days unless you were in a really, really busy storyline. So you'd usually work 2-3 days a week, but you would do one show plus parts of other shows because we had to bank shows because we take a month off for Christmas, a month off during the summer. But if you turn the TV on, the show's still there, which means we have to be doing more than one show a day. So you got to learn a lot of dialogue, and it was absolutely not unusual to have to learn 25, sometimes even 30 pages of dialogue a night. And, you know, it's challenging, but that's the job.
What's the secret to, I'm sure everyone kind of has their tricks to memorizing that amount of bulk coming at them so quickly. Did you have a system or whatnot? Like, do you remember key words? Are you like a word? Do you have like a photographic memory? How do you work with that?
Just a lot of Adderall.
nice.
You know, it's one of those things like going to the gym. You know, the more you do it, the stronger you get. And in the beginning was right. Hard. You know, but here's the thing. It's different if I say, here's a bunch of dialogue you have to learn about a character you know about and about a series of circumstances you're familiar with, as opposed to here's a play that you've never read before and you have no idea what's going on, learn all these lines. So it is easier learning lines when every reference is something that you're already anchored and familiar. I guess the secret is that you know, you do your work on your own, and then we would get to the studio and you'd rehearse it one time, and then all the actors would disappear into each other's dressing rooms with the people that you have scenes with that day, and you would run each scene three times. So it was kind of the rule of three. After running it three times, it really sticks.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. I always found it interesting, like a lot with the soap operas, you know, just the different directions it goes. I mean, obviously you've been in some of the great and crazy plot lines. When you get a script, like, is there ever times where you kind of even go, okay, this is kind of weird. What direction are we going here? Or is it just, this is what the writers have. This is where we're going. We got an arc going for 6 months away from now.
Yeah. You know, you tend to get very protective of your character.
And, yeah.
You know, there's times you read something and go, wow, this is really great. This is interesting. It's going to open up a whole storyline for me with some other character. And there's other times where you can see that possibly, you know, it's bringing a storyline to a conclusion. And, you know, you always want to be involved in a big storyline with as many characters as possible. So, yeah, for sure. You know, we would read the scripts and try to extrapolate what's happening and where it's going. And, you know, sometimes you're right and other times you're not right at all. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm paid to perform the scripts that I'm given.
Right. Now, let me ask you. So with soap operas are an interesting thing because they kind of feel like they've been built into like the fabric of TV. We know there's a carved out time for soap operas, and we generally think of like a certain, you know, demographic of people watching it. But like, is there a push? Like, and I'm sure you're kind of doing it with your show and whatnot, but a push to try or a way to try to figure out how to get a new audience, which a lot of kids are not plopped in front of a television anymore. You know, like at that time, they're kind of streaming. What is like kind of the strategy to try to get new audiences involved?
You know, I can only speak about Studio City because
right.
I'm, you know, the producer creator of the show. So I know what our strategy has been thus far, but you know, for instance, I know with Hospital and the Bold and Beautiful, when it's summertime and kids are home, they tend to skew towards a younger storyline, you know, to appeal to those audience members. So I think, demographics and, you know, there's a lot of sociological intuition that's put into the storylines. I think also, you know, shows are now available on all different platforms. So, you know, and you can now stream, you know, gone are the days where you have to show up at 1 o'clock in the afternoon to watch your soap. I mean, right. You can watch it at 1 o'clock at night when you get home from work, and not only when you want, but on what device you want.
And how many you want. You can exactly. Stream, yeah.
Right. And by creating that kind of viewers, that can bring in more viewership.
Now, before you even got into soap operas, as we were kind of getting into before we had our recording issue, you played a fantastic villainous kid. Yes, I love the Mike Barnes character. I like the whole Karate Kid 3. It almost a pure, beautiful inception of over the top, but still great action and great plot lines. I was listening up on the story of how you got the role and the things you went through. Just out of curiosity, now you have a huge background in boxing and karate and so forth. Just out of curiosity, when you have that background, you're acting. How much are you able to kind of like pull back on it, if you will? Like, because obviously you can't punch.
You mean when doing the fight scenes?
Yeah, like how much are you tweaking what you know, obviously, so you don't accidentally punch the main character in the face?
Truthfully, somebody that's actually been trained is a lot less likely to hurt you than somebody that hasn't trained.
Right.
So, okay. You know, my ability to control myself was not a huge issue, other than I had to, you know, really, really learn and focus on the choreography. And the choreography is extremely specific. There's no room for improv with the physicality, because, you know, you're timing things out, you know what comes next, you know what to do, and that way nobody gets hurt. So, but critical that you're not hurting the star is the most important thing. Ralph is the star, and, you know, right.
I'm sure directors like it when you don't hurt the stars,
Yeah. Now, is it true you got pretty banged up during that? You got hurt during that filming, right?
Yeah, it was kind of a freak accident. We had been filming for about 2 weeks, and I started having some pretty significant pain in my left thigh. And I thought it was from all the karate and training I was doing, so I started taking aspirin. We broke for Christmas, and I was in Las Vegas Christmas Day, 1989, and I passed out, and the EMTs came, and it turned out the reason I was having the pain in my leg was that I was bleeding internally, and blood was dripping on my femoral artery, which was causing me the pain. And they took me to the hospital, and they said, look, we're gonna try and save your life. And I was trying to save my life. I'm 21, I'm in great shape, I'm doing a martial art.
Right.
We gotta operate on you. And I said, what, you mean like Monday? And they said, no, we mean like 15 minutes. And it was a deal. And, when I came to in the recovery room, I mean, there really wasn't a whole lot of flowers and get well soon. It was like the studio calling and saying, look, you gotta be back at work in like 10 days or we're recasting. And so I had myself released from the hospital against medical advice. And, I went back to the set, and, I had staples up and down my stomach, and, I started training though. And, I wound up doing all my own stunts in that film, with the exception of one driving stunt. And, for that reason, that movie was so important. It was important to me because of what it did for my career. And in a lot of ways changed the trajectory of my life and my career, but also, at 21, to get a glimpse of kind of, what you got inside, at least at that point in time, at that moment, I was willing to fight hard enough to earn my place being in that film when, the universe was trying to take it away from me. And, for that reason, when I look at that film, it kind of takes me back to that. I wouldn't change that experience for anything. It was horrendously painful, and it was terrifying, and it was all that sort of stuff, but it was also gave me a lot of growth, I think, as a person.
That's awesome. And Cobra Kai's growing a lot now. Any chance that your character is going to come back for that? I know he was mentioned in an episode.
Yeah, you never know. I've talked to the producers a couple times, and I always say they're big fans of the original films, and I think they'd like to get everybody from the Karate Kid universe into Cobra Kai, as long as they can do it organically. And, I'd love to dust off the old Cobra Kai gi. And,
here's the problem, though. You haven't aged at all. Like, what the hell is, what is your secret, man? Like, is it that General Hospital juice they got going? Like, what is going on over there, man?
I made a deal with the devil. It all goes south once I go down there, but.
I say 53, man. Jesus Christ, you look like you could be in Karate Kid Part 4 in like 1991. You know. So, let me ask you, what are you working on these days, other than the show? Do you have any projects or whatnot that you are in or casted for, or something that we should be looking forward to?
There really is very, very little casting going on. Yeah. So what I've been doing is just do a lot of press, like what I'm doing with you guys, and then to promote city to increase our viewership, get more people to see the show. Like I said, tomorrow's a really big day for us. Hopefully, we're going to get some recognition for the show and some of our actors. But that's pretty much my main focus right now. you know, figuring out how we're going to get ourselves back into production and start making more episodes.
And you also came out with a book recently too, right? Success Factor X, was it?
I'm gonna have a copy right here.
Oh, wow. He's holding it.
That was convenient.
For those of you listening, he just held it up like it was a commercial.
Rex. So the book, my partner and I, Joel Lieberman, we went out to 50 exceptional individuals and said, what's your best advice about success? And we got just such an incredible response. I mean, everybody from, you know, Mark Cuban to Jason Alexander.
Yeah.
Nice.
Anthony Robbins, Brad Arnold from Three Doors Down, like all these, Olympic gold athletes, baseball players, football players, Coach K. I mean, you know, just all these great people who give incredible advice. And I think, you know, with everything everyone's going through right now, you know, you need a little inspiration.
Sure.
And this is terrific for that. It was actually just named one of the 20 most inspirational books of the last two decades by Book Authority. Nice. And Amazon new release bestseller 10 days after coming out. So
there you go.
Yeah, we're excited. It's done really well, and it's one of those books you can kind of just open up to any page, and you're gonna find something you can read that, you know, gives you some inspiration, gives you some insight into how some of these people became so successful. And it's one of those books you can go back to again and again, because you know, wherever you are in your life, the words mean different things at different times.
That's awesome. Now, you, so speaking of kind of success and writing and whatnot, I know that you you also are a fellow stand-up comedian, correct?
I do a little stand-up,
You
yeah.
dabble? You dabble?
Right before the whole coronavirus hit, I was headlining at the Comedy Store in Sunset in the Belly Room.
Yeah, jeez. All right.
And I mean, I love doing stand-up. It's something I've done off and on for years. And, you know, it's just you're out there in front of a live audience, get that instant reciprocity.
No. You know, where you, yeah. You know, there's no hiding. There's no hiding.
No.
Yeah. So let me ask you, when you you go from something in the soap opera world and then you jump onto a stage at the Comedy Store in the Belly Room, that's a complete... You know, that's a complete different muscle, complete different, I guess, reality. You know, do you find like those are kind of like you're able to just completely separate them, or do you bring that onto stage with you?
I think the best comedy comes from stuff that's true.
Right.
And so I talk about, you know, being on a soap opera. I talk about doing Karate Kid 3 and, you know, how great the late 80s were when I did Karate Kid 3, and how my old man used to walk around our little town and he just look at anyone who's there and say, my kid's the dickhead in Karate Kid 3.
Just yell at people, sign the contract!
Mostly because I was wearing the Cobra Kai gi at the time. But, you know, I talk about what I know, what my life's like. So I love doing it. I mean, it's exciting. It demands...
It's the best.
100%. Presence,
for
you know,
sure.
And so I love it.
Are you able to get up, like, with your schedule as far as production? Are you able to get up enough where you feel fresh, or is it still kind of like?
No, I don't get up probably as much as I'd like to, but you know, I get up whenever I get the chance to do it, whenever I'm asked, and I'm always writing new stuff, and you know, it's definitely. It's definitely something that I'm going to keep doing. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Now, as we kind of alluded to before the recording, I've done about 270 of these episodes. We're coming up on 300. This lady right here, my wife, has basically demanded... For you are now the third person out of 273, I would say, that she had to talk to. So this is a heck of an accomplishment right here, Sean. Now, before I turn it over to her, she will have two questions regarding General Hospital with your character. Before I hand it to her, like the one thing I love about General Hospital, the one show I will always watch with my wife is the nurse's ball week, because something about it where it's just like, oh, we got all these problems, but we're going to put on a skit show for a week. It gives me joy in my mind and all. I always turn to my wife and ask her, where are these nurses in the hospital? They're all out there dancing, doing bits. And I'm like, there's people in that hospital dying. Do you have any memories of the nurses' ball week? Out of curiosity, it pops up in your mind.
I do indeed. You know, it's that's one of those times when actually, you know, you are working around the clock. I mean, it used to take about, you know, 16, 17 hours to shoot that whole thing. And those were long days, but they were a lot of fun. And it's, you know, I think it's fun for the audience, too, to see, you know, characters that they're not used to seeing doing very different stuff up there. So,
yeah.
Go ahead. Here's your question.
You know, Sean, it's funny because Izzy, we've done 270 episodes. She's never once wanted to talk to me.
I never want to talk to you, Scott. So, when you were recording the scene where back in 1997, I think it was, with the infamous accident with Jason, did you know that that was going to change General Hospital history forever?
No, not at all. Not even a little bit. No. So I guess if you think about it, AJ really was the catalyst for bringing General Hospital into its next phase. Wow.
Or with the whole mafiosa thing where, pretty crazy. The other question, would you ever come back to General Hospital?
Listen, you know, I have learned in this business to never say never. You know, I can't imagine that they would ever bring me back.
They did before.
But I think they really killed me this time. But you know, if the right series of circumstances came up, I would consider it. You know, I hope to be very busy with my own show.
Gotcha. Yeah, I always thought that. I was always hoping that AJ and Jason would reconcile.
I think that would be a lot of fun. I would go back if I had the chance for Steve Burton and I to work together. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was always hoping that. It seemed like the timing was never right. Last time you came back, he left the show.
Yeah, no, that would be cool. I would definitely be open to that because, you know, Steve is somebody that I really like. Steve is actually in Success Factor X.
Nice.
Yeah, I think there's unfinished business between those two characters.
Yeah, 270 episodes, and she has not listened to one of ours. Never but, you know, it's okay. It's okay. Sean, I want to, first off, thank you for giving us a few minutes on the show here. We wish you the best of luck, especially, you know, what this will come out after. But tomorrow with your nomination and whatnot, if people want to check out what you're doing or see what you're up to, what's the best place for them to follow all things Sean?
I use Twitter a lot, so you can follow me at Twitter at Sean Kanan and on Instagram at Sean.Kanan. And I really try and get back to everybody that contacts me as best I can. So, sure. And you guys, thank you so much. This was nice. We're just like sitting around talking with friends. So, I wish you guys the best. I hope you stay healthy and we maybe have a chance to meet each other sometime on the other side of this crazy.
All right, Sean Kanan, Mike. Sean Kanan.
What do you think you would like to be if you were in like a soap opera? Would you like to be like a mafia boss? Do you want to be like the handsome doctor?
I think I would go with kind of the handsome doctor thing because, one, it would be cool to be regarded as like the handsome guy for once. And then, two, I feel like those guys always get like a reoccurring role. Like they always get to come back, and I think, part of the General Hospital game and all that is to try to have longevity, right? You get paid longer, you get more time on the show, and more time to make a name for yourself. So I go with the handsome doctor. I feel like mafia boss only a couple episodes.
Mm.
So instead of McDreamy, since you're Irish, it'd be MacDreamy.
No, oh, same thing. McDreamy, MacDreamy. Yeah, yeah. McDreamy's Irish. Come on.
I think I'd rather be kind of like the side character, because those are the ones that go on through years and years, and you never have to worry about being in the car crash, getting the amnesia. It's just like the expert friend, you know, where it's like, oh, somebody kidnapped Laura, and then, like, I get called in and, like, help solve the issue, you
right.
know?
Right, right. So that's where you see yourself. Nobody's, like,
shooting Mike Berlew in General Hospital.
just real life. Just real life.
Hey, but they keep on missing, so I keep showing up for you, buddy boy. Mm.
Damn. I got to start putting a little bit more money in my assassination hires, you know? Like, throw them, you know, get a higher quality shot.
I keep telling you, if they're offering deals in Reddit, they're probably not the best guys. I got to be brutally honest with you. I don't think they're the marksmen, as they claim on Reddit/marksmen.
Reddit/kill your co-host. So, Berlo, we've been doing everybody during this pandemic has been doing a lot of Zoom calls. You know, mm-hmm. We've done a couple of Zoom ones, which turned out great. We posted one of Bruce Valanche the other night. But I don't know, Berla, have you had any awkward Zoom call experiences yet?
I can't say I really do. I know, like, when we do Zoom calls with a couple of our friends in New Jersey, a lot of times we'll get together to kind of all watch like a WWE pay-per-view together. And like Izzy's like making extra sure what angle the camera is at, because she's like, our bedroom is messy. And the last thing she wants is them to see everything that's scattered around in there. Cause it's pretty much a pile in my bedroom.
Yeah.
But knock on wood, nothing has happened so far. And work-wise, luckily, everybody, since all the Americans gone home, nope, we haven't done video chats. It used to be when we were in the office and we'd have our collared shirts and our nice pants on, and we go in a conference room. It's like, oh, we're going to do a video call with the guys in Costa Rica, and we're going to do it on camera so we can all look at each other and, you know, make it more, you know, togetherness. But like the second we realize, okay, we're going home and most of us aren't going to shower before work starts, it's like, nope, camera gotcha. Ain't working.
Well, as you know, Zoom has been taken over, and unfortunately what happens is a lot of awkwardness happens sometimes on Zoom. People forget their cameras are on, things happen in the background. I talked to you about my friend Steve, who has passed out. Oh, Steve update. Dun, 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 dun.
Steve update. Purple Shenanigans 2020.
So my friend Steve gets drunk on every one of our Zoom calls. We meet on Fridays with my friends. And Mike, Steve made it through a call.
You're slightly less an alcoholic. You're slightly less an alcoholic.
But let me update you. He called me the next night. I was having a campfire or whatever, and mm-hmm. he passed out mid-call the day after the day he made it.
So he finally broke his Cal Ripken streak just to start a new one, is what you're telling us.
And then last Friday, I don't know, how would you count this? Okay, we're having a Zoom call, and around 1:15, Steve falls out of his chair and is gone. Okay?
Like, literally just
on the floor.
Drops out, and literally everybody's like, Steve?
Yep, exactly. Steve? Camera on, everything. And so Steve doesn't make it. And then with 3 minutes to go, Steve arises like the Undertaker, like gets up, and you see like movement, like, rah, and he gets on. He's like, hey, guys. And we're like, oh my God, you made it back. And then we like sign off after. Does that count?
once you go down, I mean, let me ask you, like, when he fell down, did he stay down for a period of time?
Probably about 15 minutes, at least, 20 minutes.
It has to count.
All right.
There is no way. It's one thing if he just, like, he's a little tipsy and he fell down and he got up and everybody's laughing. You're down for a distance and you're probably doing a shut eye. Sorry, yeah. Buddy. You have continued your streak. There.
Steve's
you're,
got problems. Steve has had some serious problems.
Yeah, you got a Joe DiMaggio problem, and I'm not talking about the baseball part.
So I looked up a couple Zoom incidents that have happened, Zoom mishaps, if you will. And I want to think
before you start. I can actually give you one from a friend.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
So I, my wife's best friend down here in Georgia, she's a teacher, and she was doing a Zoom class with the kids, and it was kind of like a reading assignment where you had to fill out some, it was like a test of some sorts. So she went through the whole thing, and she sent back, and she's looking at the cameras, and she noticed something unique about one of her students. How there's her one of her students looks exactly like the student's mother.
Okay.
So she double clicks on it to open it up, just see the full view. And she even basically rep blind copies other teachers on there to kind of say, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? And basically, she's seeing the mother taking the test, and as you blow up the picture, the kid is in the background in the corner, like, playing video games.
Yes.
So she sent a message directly to her, excuse me, you need to have your child do this assignment, and magically, the internet connection disappeared right after that.
Yeah, it makes sense. that's America, man. Entitled children. Yep, overbearing parents.
The mother complained about something afterwards.
Oh, so. Yeah. She complained that the test was too hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. She said apparently, like, somebody sent a letter to the school. I'm not sure if it was exactly that mother or somebody else, but they spelled academics A C A D E M I X.
Nice.
So, good job, Georgia. We're really bumping up our rankings in the top 50.
That's it. All right, Mike, number one, Miss Potato Head. Lizette Ocampo, the political director at People for the American Way, recently turned up to her Monday morning meeting as a potato. Ocampo had downloaded the filter along with other fun look for a virtual happy hour the Friday beforehand, but forgot she had done so. So Monday morning, we had our meeting, and I usually try to do a camera. And when we started the meeting, I saw myself as a potato. I was so confused as to why I was a potato. Of all things I could be, why a potato, Mike?
So you're saying the whole incident was wedged into her day?
I see what you did there.
Because there's potato wedges.
She also... afterward, she sent a thing to her employees. I am potato boss. Please stay planted at home.
Did she say, thank God it's fries day?
Oh, God. God, you're good.
It's your turn.
it's my turn. Yeah, the only thing I want to do is mash your face into oblivion right now. But, okay. How about a pee break, Mike?
All right.
A Zoomer named Jennifer didn't let her meeting get in the way of needing to pee. However, she was left red-faced when she took her laptop into the bathroom with her and forgot to turn the camera off. In a video clip shared from the meeting, Jennifer can be seen walking through the house before pulling down her pants and plopping herself down in the toilet. After peers gasped and giggled, she turned on the camera. She turned the camera away before asking what happened. I don't know. How do you feel after that, Mike? You forget your things on and you pee in front of your coworkers.
Well, I mean, that'd be pretty embarrassing. That's why, like, anytime if I had to, like, pee in a can while I'm here in the basement and I can't go upstairs and all, I make extra sure I'm on the side of the the computer. So even if the camera turns on, they can't get the full view, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right. So this next person was on a work call, and the parents are working around the working at home. Pineapple Media co-founder Jennifer Weiss Berman, 3-year-old son, walked behind her and screamed, "Look at my penis," and hit the button on his fart machine.
Well, that's what I do in most of my meetings.
I was going to say, damn, this kid's got good material, man.
Yeah, I mean, I keep telling you, that's how we should open the show. You keep on saying it's hard to make these introductions. I mean, you just come in there, look at my penis.
It's got a different vibe when it comes from you, though. I don't know. It seems a lot less innocent.
Is it like an outro, you're saying? No, Berloom.
Stop.
This is not our commercial break.
All right.
I am Michael Berloom. Look at my penis. Now back to verbal shenanigans.
It's not bad. Not bad. Healthcare and crisis communicator Christina Kirby made a dash to the linen closet to grab a towel, not realizing she would have been seen on her husband's video call. If you and your husband were both working from home, checking to see if blah, 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 blah. So she was just basically buck naked and had to run to get a towel on her husband's call. Another woman, her son, joined the call. She thought her computer was off into her company, and he put a virtual background of Danny DeVito up.
Well, that kid's just amazing.
Awesome.
she probably came back and had a promotion waiting for her. That's the only thing you can do when Danny DeVito is staring at you.
Did you hear about the priest that he was doing a sermon and he accidentally hit the filters and he had confetti shooting out of his head?
I mean, that is a miracle. I mean, isn't that the point of most religions?
I mean, no, that, like, religion's really boring. So if the guy had confetti shooting...
Think about it. If Jesus was with his disciples and he broke bread and confetti shot out, they'd be like, oh, that's a disciple. That's the guy we got to follow. That is the Son of God right there. None of that, this is my body stuff. not turning water into wine. It's just, boo, confetti.
Yeah. I mean, we got other stories of a doctor giving advice to clients why he had a picture of a man putting his hand all the way up the rear end of a cow on his wall. That's interesting.
Well, I mean, that was a good vacation. What can I tell you?
And we got, let's see, what else do we have? A woman doing a speech, like trying to sell a product, and then her husband walks out in his tidy whiteys and his high white socks.
Nice. I mean, these are people living their lives. I mean,
do you think some of these are planned?
I'm sure a few are.
I think they are too.
I would say, I've got like the potato thing. Like, oh, I don't know how to turn it off. That seems a little planned. That seems kind of cute. But hey, you got to liven things up. I mean, when the world's ending and there's race wars, you got to get a smile on your face. And if it means your kid coming down and making a fart sound, you got to do it.
If you found out like this was the end and like you had your days numbered, how would you spend like, let's say you knew like 3 days was left. How would you spend your last 3 days?
Spend my last 3 days.
3 days. So you found out some maniac. Let's do a real scenario. Some maniac has the riots have happened and they've gotten into the U.S. defense thing, and now they're able to
let the nukes go.
They're able to let the nukes go, and they say in 3 days we're ending this. How do you spend your last 3 days?
Okay. Let's see. Day one, I probably go see the parents. You know. Get that, hug them, say our goodbyes or whatever. Plus, it gives everybody else 2 days to do anything they want on their own. So that's a good, you know.
I would find that hard. I would almost like, I don't know. It might be harder to just say goodbye, like knowing the world is going to end. Like, I don't know. That's tough.
But knowing this world, like even when we, like looking at the first days of the pandemic, we were laughing at it. We're like, nah, this ain't going to be as bad as they say. Mm-hmm. You know, so I feel even if we somewhat in the back of our head say we got 3 days, there's also going to be a part of our brain going to be like, ah, they'll get those terrorists. They'll get them out of there. They'll take one of the keys away. They're not going to shoot off the nukes.
Yeah.
We're fine.
All right. So day one, you go see the parents. You say goodbye.
Yeah.
So now you got two days left to figure it out.
Now I got 2 days. Day two, to make my wife happy, we'll drive to some kind of Disney thing.
Oh, do you mean to say, day two, to make my wife happy, I'd kill myself so she has day three to
it. Babe, I got to give you at least 24 hours to enjoy life. I mean, go out there to the single world, you know? Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, one last real gift to my wife would be, like, as crazy as sound, drive down to Disney, somehow find a way to get in one of those parks, ride one of those rides, and give her like one moment of peace where her last days are with her favorite place on earth.
As you wear the Goofy outfit.
No, I mean, we got enough t-shirts and all that fun stuff. I don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. Third day, you know, probably alone time with the wife. Bring the dog after everything, be on the bed with the dog. We'll bring the cat upstairs and kind of just count down as a family.
Wow. That got really deep. I thought like your third day you'd be like reading your stories from your fifth grade yearbook on your porch naked to the neighborhood. Like, so normal. You're so normal and sweet.
Well, you know, I'm loud on this podcast. I'm quiet in the real world. What can I tell you? I come up here and do some, say, the wackiest, crappiest stuff, and then I turn off the mic and, you know, I'm like, let's do our taxes, babe.
She's like, we just did them. It's June.
Yes, but, you know, the world's going to end in 3 days, so I'll make sure there's filed so we have extra money in the bank. You know, if we're the last two people on Earth, I don't want to be poor.
I don't want to be the poorest guy on Earth. I've been closed for the last 10 years. I don't want to finally hit that.
Honey, I found food, but it's at a vending machine, and I don't have any dollars, so I'm so sorry.
What was your poorest moment? I know mine.
I mean, there were times like when I was single and I was under depression. So I would just, I never cared about saving. So yeah. There were times where it's like, I'll take a few dollars out of the bank. What's taking so long? What's this weird message on the ATM? Yeah. So I've had a few moments like that. I mean, nothing where it's like, oh God, they're going to take this or that, but. I think enough where it's like, okay, I got to put this on the credit card. And
yeah. Now, like, it's the worst because I was always really good with money and kind of on top of money. And then when I was going through my divorce, I was left alone with to keep a mortgage afloat by myself for a mortgage that was for two people, you know, like for two people working. And things dwindled down where I was just – trying to exist. I mean, you were there basically, and it was a lot of.
So you're more depressed.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. Rotisserie chickens, a lot of water. But I remember, and I think I told the story in the podcast, but it doesn't matter. I had oil heat at the time, and oil heat blows. It's not even close to as efficient. It's pain in the ass to find a delivery service. It rises and falls with the economy. It sucks. So And a lot of places at the time would do like minimum of like 250 gallons of, or 150 gallons of oil. So you factor that by like three, right? Like $3 a gallon at the time. It basically reflects in the, whatever the gas price is. So it was about three bucks back then. So that would be like, if it was 150, that would be like $450. Now, when you're dirt poor, you don't have $450 and you can't find a minimum service or whatever. So I had done some research online, and then somebody also told me, like, you could pour diesel fuel into the tank. It's the same exact thing. I said, okay. So every day, and of course, like, the loneliest of times for me was in the winter by myself. Like, I was pretty much keeping that up. And I would keep the blue gas tank, which is, you can only put diesel fuel in the blue one.
Mm-hmm.
And I would basically go back from work, pick up about $11 of diesel fuel. It was the winter. Go to the basement and pour the diesel fuel into the heater and hope I would have heat for the night. It was pretty crappy times. I mean, but I guess like hard times make hard people, right? I don't know. It was, and also like when it goes so low, sometimes it won't kick on, like, because the oil is not high enough. So, like, and it's also not great for the heating system. So, you know.
That kind of reminds me of a time. Now, this wasn't my poorest time, but I had to be more frugal with my money because I just started my job, my infamous job, and they were paying me basically nothing for driving an hour and a half up to there every day. But, for lunch, what I would do a lot of times, I would stop off at a ShopRite, and I didn't have funds to just like go out to fast food and get something. So what I would do is I would try to get lunch meat, and sometimes that'd be a little too expensive. So the ShopRite would sell these meat ends, which is basically the round ends of like the turkey, the cheese, whatever. The actual outside part is not edible, but the insides are. So like I would buy a couple of those because they would only be like 30 cents each, and I'd be literally like taking a spoon and scooping up my meat into my mouth.
I remember like my big thing, like if you remember where I used to live, Mike, where we used to do the podcast, there was that pizza place up the street that we used to always order from.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I'd order like a pizza and like save it for like basically try to save it for 4 days for dinner. Like, you know, if it's eight slices, that's two a night. I'm okay, you know, and God, I don't know. I feel like, though, I don't regret any of that time. Like, I feel like the challenge of living a little bit poor makes you appreciate a lot of things, man. I feel like it makes you really appreciate, like, being comfortable. Listen, no one here is rich beyond their means or anything, but at least I can pay the bills and order out every once in a while, and I'm okay with that. So it's like, I don't know. It's a very cumbersome experience being poor. So you imagine, to bring this all around, you imagine what it's like to be systematically poor for generations and generations and having a hard time getting ahead and starting, you know, imagine starting a race, you know, there's a reason why how many cars are in NASCAR in a race?
40 on most races.
Yeah. Now, how many 40th place guys win the race?
Depends on the track. It's not super out of the ordinary, but yeah, you don't put money down on if they're 40th because they qualified 40th. Yeah, you put no money on those guys. But
well, that's what I mean. So that's what I mean. It shows you like when you're down there and everything around you is down. It's very hard to win the race and get ahead. So,
yeah. Well, if that's not bad enough, they can't look at pretty Confederate flags anymore. So,
yeah. You know what? I'm sorry, Mike. No more your tailgate's going to change a little bit.
And also, like, I'm one of those. I was shocked by it.
I love it.
I'm kind of I'm very happy for him, especially how fast it was. It basically was the one African American driver on the circuit, Bubba Wallace, saying in an interview, "That's my big goal to get that happen." And 2 days later, NASCAR says, "You got it." That's unheard of. Let's also add, he drives for Richard Petty, who, if you watch NASCAR, you know who Richard Petty is. He most wins in history, like literally the king of NASCAR. He has very conservative views. I remember even like when the Kaepernick thing was happening, he was quoted as saying, if any driver tries to, or anybody on the crew tries to take a knee during the national anthem, I will fire them in a heartbeat. And Wednesday they had a race. It was Black Lives Matter. It was a black hand and a white hand holding together. There was peace signs. It was hashtag Black Lives Matter. That's great.
Especially for that sport, which gets, it gets the connotation that it's pretty much white only, Southern kind of thing. So that's great.
Yeah, I mean, everything, that's great. I've seen people crying. I'm on a ton of NASCAR sites. I've got, somebody puts up the story on Facebook. There's like 10% of people putting the red face on there. You get the comments, "Oh, that's it. I'm never going to do it." There's actually a truck owner who's saying this is last year in NASCAR. He's giving up because of this. Now, granted, he's a nobody. I will give him, it's his right to, because he owns the trucks and it's his team. So it's his right to leave. But at the end of the day, it's like, I'm not sure that's the sword to die on. But for a sport that's not known for progression, this is an amazing day.
That's great. And then there's America's game, baseball, which is a reflection of America. Billionaires and millionaires arguing over nothing and completely missing the point, and where the average person loses out. It truly is America's game.
Let's see. It was the number one sport in America till about mid-80s.
Yep.
Then they were number two to baseball. Then by the Jordan era, they were number three with basketball.
Yep. You know what?
I'm sure they're looking over their shoulder and seeing Major League Soccer ready to say, "We'll take hockey, that spot from you."
UFC.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, like
golf,
team sports. I would say there's the five. It's baseball, football, basketball, hockey, soccer. And they're ready to go right to the bottom. Hockey, if it wasn't for the fact we have so many like hot areas and kids aren't growing up on ice skates, it would be a lot higher. That's the only reason why hockey stays.
Baseball is completely tone deaf yet again. Mm-hmm. And they're getting very close to losing another year of baseball. And I don't know if they can handle it, man. And I will tell you, I've worked with kids a lot in my life. They don't care about baseball. They don't. They love the NBA stars. They love LeBron and Curry. They love the NFL. They love They love all the hot teams in the NFL. I think in the NBA, the kids love stars. They don't give a crap about teams. NFL, they love teams, but it doesn't even matter locally. That's how you know the NFL is a big brand. I've met kids who are Seahawks fans and 49er fans and Rams fans. Baseball, they all go, "I like the Yankees," and they do. They have no idea who's on that team. They don't care. Baseball is a dying breed, man. It's guys like me and you and people in our age group that still love it, but it is not hitting with the kids. It's too slow. They're just greedy.
And it, like you said, it's the slowness. It's the so hard to change. I mean, we still got two leagues who can't decide what they're going to do, a pitcher hitting or a designated hitter. And that's been since like the 70s. There's no sign of change. That's why I say they got to watch out for soccer, because you look at soccer fans, like I'm here passionate. In Atlanta, so huge.
Passionate.
You look at the cities where they're going into, Austin, Texas, a huge progressive liberal city. They love the fact, "I know I'm only going to be here for about a little over 2 hours."
Yep.
That's how long
the game doesn't stop. There's no stoppage in play, and there's a halftime. That's it.
No, and they're getting international stars to come over here. Eventually, MLS is going to have money where they're going to, like, we're going to get a top 10 star.
It's going to happen. It's absolutely going to happen.
When you get those national fans there, baseball is done. They are done.
They have zero. They have zero attraction to a young fan. They have zero attraction in inner cities and for African Americans and minorities. They don't care about it in this country at all. And it's just a lot of people keeping it afloat, keeping it afloat. Baseball is going to be gone, dude.
I mean, you just look at the stadiums half the time. I mean, growing up, even like on a Wednesday night, I would say stadiums were mostly.
You remember those old like ESPN, like dun, 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 like game of the week or whatever it was? They were exciting.
Dude, I remember like when it was like on ABC and even NBC. It was come World Series time. There, you don't talk about anything. Nobody cared about week 10 of the NFL. It's like, go. No. We got baseball playoffs happening here. That's all we need. And it's sad, but
they did it to themselves.
They did. In the end, they're getting a little too cocky. They can't figure out how many games they want to play. They can't figure out how to make it safe.
And it also seems like no one's really like, hey, we got to go out there and play for our fans. They're all like, well, what salary cut are we going to take? And then the millionaires are like, what salary are you expected us to pay you? Like, it's never like we want to get out there and, like, get the game out and give people something to watch. This is why you got to give Dana White credit, man. He put that sport out there, and he got it out there during all of this. And things are starting to fall in place for other sports. But he was the first one, like, we'll figure it out. I'll take all the – you know, the missiles coming at me and whatever, I'll figure it out. And he stood there, and it's been great.
Yeah, they're the Fight Islands in United Arab Emirates. Yep. And now he's like, now we can get international fighters here.
Yep.
He's basically figured out everything. I mean,
and let me tell you,
he's figured out, I'll give it to NASCAR. They figure it out with, like, all right, you got less crewmen, you got to wear cloths, we're going to temperature you. If I see you without a mask on, you're getting thrown out of here with a huge fine. So everybody's been doing it, and it's been good racing too.
No, right. I'm sure the racing's been good. By the way, I bet Martin Truex Jr. the other day, because that's how bored I was, to win, and he was freaking right there, and I lost in the last like 10 laps.
Martin Truex won last night.
No, on whatever it was, Saturday or Sunday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was right there.
Yeah, Wednesday he won.
But it doesn't matter. So, I got my money back from DraftKings. It was, if he finishes top three, you get your money back. So
Gotcha.
Now, I'm with the Jersey boy. I figure Trevor Bayne doesn't even race anymore, so I got to have a new guy.
He's got the coffee shop in Tennessee.
I don't care. I got to go with Martin Truex.
I've been calling up his coffee shop. Dude, can we go surfing again? He's like, stop calling me!
I'm a Truex guy.
For 5 minutes!
I'm a Martin Truex guy. That's my team.
Matt DiBenedetto.
All right. On that note, let's get the hell out of here, bro. Anything to promote before we go?
Former guest Lucy Sproggin. She'll be coming out with her sixth album soon called Choices. If everything goes right in the United Kingdom, she's going to be touring in November in Glasgow, Sheffield, Bristol, London, Manchester. Super fun, entertaining guests that we had on the show. And along with all her singing talents, girl is ripped as hell. God bless her.
She's, you can check out up. Her
Instagram. But look up Lucy Sproggin, Sproggan. Check out some of her music on YouTube and buy her new album.
I will promote, as far as local business and a place that's been very prominent in my comedy career. So they're opening back up here in Jersey in 3 days, on the 15th. For outdoor seating, they have outdoor seating on both sides now. They figured it out. That's where we do our comedy shows. God willing, they will come back again, because God knows I miss it. I also was having beer from them tonight. Ordered food for dinner. They have crowlers to go. They're trying to survive. Good old Tap House 15 in Jefferson, New Jersey. So please go support them. They've supported us for a long time now. So That's it, guys. We have a really fun interview coming up on Monday. Tonight was a really fun interview. Last Monday with Bruce Valanche was a great interview. So we got a lot of great stuff coming up. And again, I want to thank Sean Kanan and Mike Berlow. I guess you're cool and whatnot, but yeah, whatever. Life
I'm
is fun.
I'm the coolest guy in the room. What can I tell you?
I know you are. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
Look at my penis.
Hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Did he go and leave you all alone? I got a bad desire. Oh, I'm on fire. Tell me now, baby, is it good to you? And can he do to you the things that I do? Oh, no. I can take you high. Oh,